A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You are also to love one another. By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. It's in John 13. Whatever was happening here, as Jesus spoke to his apostles, it offered them something truly new, something that would make them distinct. Love. But what's that? I mean, back then, in his time, and in our time, love could mean any number of things. So what kind of love? Well, what Jesus has for us in the context is going to define that, give it some definition for us, to show us what kind of love. He's saying this to them while the very next day he's going to be crucified. Love as I have loved you. He's saying this after just having done some very shocking behavior in service to them earlier in the chapter. Let's go ahead and read John 13, verses 3 through 5 for now. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Foot washing. Can you imagine? People walked the streets in sandals. But it wasn't just dust out there on the street, was it? They had beasts of burden all over the place. And so where you have animals, donkeys, I don't know, camels, I imagine, those animals weren't polite about where they used the bathroom. I'm trying to say this in a way that children can understand. The streets were gross. You can imagine the importance of this foot washing practice, and also the humiliation of having to be the person who has to wash anyone's feet. So let's think about what just happened here. Just a few verses to describe what Jesus does here as he's about to face what he knows is coming. It wasn't just anyone's job to wash feet. There were all kinds of traditions that were kept, that people cared about, that were connected to their view of who was important and who wasn't, who was in charge and who wasn't, who was the master and who was the slave. All of those things helped people determine whose job it was to wash feet. People didn't like take turns or take a vote. People knew, generally, whose job it was. It was the lower people, the people considered less important, the slaves. But not even just always just any lower person. It had to be someone who was significantly lower. You wouldn't even just ask if you were a rabbi, a teacher. You weren't supposed to just go ask the disciples to do that. No, you needed someone like a slave. And maybe not a Hebrew slave. Maybe a Gentile slave. Someone way at the bottom of how they viewed people. In one commentary I read, someone said it outright, no one ever did what Jesus does here as a superior to his inferiors. There's just no record of anyone in Roman culture, in Jewish culture, of getting down and washing the feet of people that were considered below them, let alone washing the feet of peers, which was maybe happened sometime, but would have been rare in and of itself. He washed the feet of his disciples. So for Jesus to have done this would have been, at the very least, awkward, but probably shocking, confusing. I mean, it sounds awkward for us to wash feet, and I'm not going to try to be the edgy, clever preacher today who's going to wash anyone's feet today. Maybe I should. I don't know. But since I think of you more highly, then I would expect you to do it for me since I'm the lower one. It's awkward for us, but it would have been far more awkward with the rules they had set in their society for a rabbi to do this for the disciples, let alone what we know in the Gospel of John. This isn't a rabbi doing this for disciples. This is God having become flesh doing this menial, demeaning task for his disciples. And we don't have to just wonder how they responded, because Peter's there, and well, a lot of times that means we know what they're thinking, because Peter says what everyone's thinking. Verse 6. He came unto Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." There's a lot to ponder here. The passage resists our tendency to extract a moral and walk away from a text. If it's humility that we're after, is that moral value or service, that's what we're supposed to learn, just walk away. Peter learned the lesson. And I've seen multiple commentators and one teacher I had who've made this point. But Peter got humility, it appears. At least humility as he understood it. Peter knew his place. Peter knew his place. That's the danger of extracting a moral from the Bible and walking away. If we walk away with humility or service, we walk away with our definition of humility and service. And just leave it at that. Peter knew his place as a disciple of the Christ. But did Peter have anything that would cause him to serve a peer or someone he would consider below himself? Jesus corrects Peter. See, if we just try to extract the moral, something gets lost in translation. There's so much to what happens here. The passage cannot effectively serve a lesson on what we must do until we understand what Jesus did. Peter is told, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." So in fact, I venture to say that pride is actually there for Peter. He seems to understand humility, he knows his place, but yet he says to the Lord of the universe, "You may not do this thing." And very emphatically he says it. "You just may never do this thing." What arrogance it takes to refuse what the Lord has decided to do. Peter's done this before. Not in the Gospel of John, recorded there, but in the other Gospels. Jesus is saying, "I'm going to go to the cross," and Peter says, "No, I know better. No, don't talk that way." I don't know exactly what he says, but he rebukes Jesus for saying that he was going to be rejected and killed. Now, thankfully, and we need to give whatever credit we can to Peter, don't we, after being hard on him, he accepts. Jesus corrects him, and he accepts it, and eagerly so. Wash my hands and my head. So Peter helps us process this. He voices his thoughts and helps us to appreciate what's going on here. Our idea of humility needs to change, and our sense of what obligation needs to change. And we should see our desperate need to be washed, cleansed, served by Christ. We are clean because of what Christ's shocking service to us is on the cross. And so Jesus implied that there was much more to this than just washing feet. He's talking about the spiritual cleansing that comes through his death, which of course Peter is not going to understand right now, but spiritual cleansing that Christ brings. And so Peter accepts. Let's continue to read verses 10 and 11 here. Jesus said to him, "The one who is bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you. For he knew who was to betray him. That was why he said, 'Not all of you are clean.'" Peter is clean. The apostles are clean. As people of faith, disciples of Christ, they're clean. And that's ambiguous in English. The ESV provides a note. This is you plural. Y'all are clean, but not every one of y'all are clean. So not every one of the apostles is clean. Jesus knows this. What are we talking about here? Well, John tells us. You know who's betraying him. He knew Judas was about to hand him over to authorities. And I want you to notice that started partway into the passage intentionally. John didn't wait till after the foot washing to remind us of what Judas was going to do and remind us of what Jesus knew. He says it here in verses 10 and 11, but go back to verses 1 and 2 as John packs in a lot of information to remind us of what Jesus knows. "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper." John could have just said, Jesus rose from supper and here's what he did. But instead he wants us to know what Jesus knew. He loved his disciples, and that love then, in being told about that love, we're told about Judas. He had loved his disciples to the end. He loved Judas, knowing what Judas was going to do. So John keeps reiterating that. We did not share notes ahead of time, but your talk complimented what we're doing now. He knew specifically about Judas. John wants to make sure we understand that. Jesus, then, with Judas present, washes their feet. He washes the feet of the one he knows will betray him. He knows Judas's heart has already been given over to Satan. And he does this service, this humiliating service. Jesus doesn't only serve those who turn out to be faithful disciples. He died, not just for those who would be saved. His death on the cross was a service for all, in that anyone could respond appropriately. He washed the feet of Judas. He died for Judas. Now let's read verses 12 through 20, which is the last major section we'll be going through here. Verses 12 through 20. As Jesus does what he often does in the Gospel of John, tells us exactly what to think about what he just did. "When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, 'Do you understand what I've done to you? You call me teacher and Lord. You are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. I am not speaking of all of you. I know whom I have chosen, but the scripture will be fulfilled. He who ate my bread has lifted his heel against me. I'm telling you this now before it takes place, that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever receives the one I send receives me, and whoever receives me receives the one who sent me. First, notice how we are forced again to keep Judas in mind. And then the next section, which actually Oren referenced, is all about the betrayal and Jesus pointing that out. Judas was going to lift his heel against Jesus. And I don't know if that's an intentional play on what they've just done. But we either let Jesus wash our feet or we raise our heel against him. We either receive his grace or spit on it. But if we do receive it, it necessarily changes us to be like him. Jesus does here what he does often in John, explaining what he, the significance of what he'd done. When Jesus serves us and sacrifices for us, it uproots and rebuilds how we think about obligation. Jesus didn't have to do it this way. He could have just said, we need to do humble service to others. And he does that sometimes, right? He just teaches hard things. Like in the Sermon on the Mount, sometimes he just teaches it. He doesn't always have opportunity to act everything out. And Jesus could have done that for us here. He could have told Peter, what are you waiting for? You know, we're all here. Maybe there's no slaves around. So what are you waiting for, Peter? Get up, wash people's feet. And obviously, Peter would need to obey. But that's not what Jesus did. Do you see the power in what he did instead? He didn't jump to application, except in the sense that he himself implemented it. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. That's a little bit of an understatement, isn't it? Maybe it's the way it comes through in translation. You ought to do this. You must. You must. See, there's no politely opting out. No thanks. Not my thing. Don't like feet. Peter wasn't allowed to do that. He was warned that he couldn't even avoid participate in being served. He was warned not to be too proud to receive service from Jesus. We are filthy. We needed Jesus to cleanse us, and we accepted that service. Maybe we've forgotten the offense of that. We've accepted. We've said, God said, I'm going to do the most humiliating thing for you, the most demeaning thing. I'm going to give my son to die for you. And we said, sure. I need that desperately. We accepted that. So he did that for us. We willingly received it. So what extent of sacrifice is just too much for us to do for others? And notice that Jesus doesn't have one love for dying on the cross, and then another love, smaller love for the little task of washing feet. The same love goes into both acts. So may we serve, even those who apparently don't deserve it, with the same love of the cross as Christ served. So notice this in other disciples. See it in others. Notice that there are people who just jump at the opportunity to serve, visibly or not, and to serve those who haven't necessarily earned it and who don't have the capacity to pay them back in some fashion. Those Christians who behave self-sacrificially in that way, they don't behave that way because it's just always a lot of fun or because you always can feel or see the rewards. They are compelled to do it. Not forced, compelled. And I mean that in a specific way. If Christ so served us, how could we not serve others? And so may we each grow to imitate Christ to the point where people will look at us and be surprised, maybe shocked at the humiliating service we do for others. Look at us and say, those people have got to be Christians. Not because of a bumper sticker we have on our car or a t-shirt we're wearing, But they'll know we're Christians by our love. Thanks for your attention.